Welcome back to Chatting Rabbis. Here we are a few days before Pesach in the Hebrew year 5783, Heitovshin Pei Gimel. This is Eliezer Zalmanov from Munster, Indiana.
Mendy Chitrik from Istanbul, Turkey.
So we're getting ready for Pesach. Pesach is always a fun holiday, and I say that half sarcastically, half seriously. The other day, my 8-year-old daughter was telling me how excited she is for Pesach, and she's looking forward to it, and part of me wanted to tell her it's so nice to be naive as a child and to really be looking forward to a yontif without having to do any of the work and preparing for it. But I held my tongue and I told my daughter that I'm also very excited about it and I'm looking forward to hearing everything that she learned about Pesach in school and for her to share all of her arts and crafts and for her Haggadah with us. But then I had to tell myself that I had to actually convince myself that the work that we put in for these Yomim Tovim and the anxiety and the stress that comes along with it is all worth it. Between kashering kitchens and signing up people for the Seder and ensuring that as many Jews in the community have Shmura Matzah for Pesach and at the same time making sure that our kids have clothes for Yontif and making sure that our kids get haircuts in time for Yontif and that the cars get cleaned and all chametz removed from the house, especially in our car, where we spend half of our life in it, so it also serves as a kitchen and as a dining room. So yeah, there's a lot of work, a lot of stress associated with the holiday of Pesach, but learning from the children, that you focus on the excitement and on the good parts of it and not so much on the stress and in the anxiety. On top of that, this year, our community, someone in our community, a caterer, decided to offer to various Chabad houses around our area within driving distance, within several hundred miles in all directions, prepared Seder meals for their public Sdarim, for their public community Sdarim. And they were trying to find a place to cook it, and we found our local Jewish Federation's kitchen, which generally I don't eat food prepared in that kitchen for various reasons, for various kosher reasons. But in honor of Pesach, the Federation allowed me to go in and kosher the kitchen properly and keep it under lock and key. And we're preparing close to 1,000 Pesach meals for various shluchim and Chabad houses around the area. So add that to the fun. It was my first time koshering a full commercial kitchen. And, you know, all the previous kitchens that I've koshered for Pesach and otherwise were in private homes. And even in my Chabad house, our kitchen is not a commercial kitchen. So this was an exciting and interesting experience for me, and hopefully it'll grow. The endeavor will grow, and the goal is that our federation decides to keep the kosher status of the kitchen at the level where even I would be comfortable eating there. Pesach is all about, like we said last week, breaking free and going beyond your limitations. So hopefully this is an exciting project on our end over here. What's going on by you, Mendy?
So Pesach is an interesting project by us. We're preparing a Pesach Seder for some 250 travelers. I already ordered food. We're going to cook most of the food in our home. I schlepped matzah with suitcases and 3 trips it took from Israel to bring the matzah. Handmade shmua matzah. We have also given out matzahs to more than 200 people so far. 200 people, families. So we're going to have a big Seder in a hotel.
For locals or for tourists?
It's locals and tourists. From tourists, we charge a donation. From locals, it's however much they want to donate and participate. Problem is that we prepared for 250 people because last year we did host more than 200 people in 2 locations. I had this year to make them all in 1 location to make it easier. Make logistics easier for everybody besides for us, because it's going to mean we have to walk for about 40 minutes after the Seder. But have not had that many registrations as I thought I would. So right now we're up to about 120.
Are there still Russians or Ukrainians?
Yeah, that includes Russians, Ukrainians, Americans, and other expats that live here. So, it's a... Everything is an experience. This is might be even a costly experience because the cost of renting the place and caterer and everything is not that easy. it is what it is.
It is what it is. We learn from our mistakes. But listen, 120 people at the Seder is not nothing to poo-poo. It's
okay, so 120 people at the Seder at the cost of 250. Okay, but that's...
Easy for me to say. It's not my my credit card being swiped.
That's right. So it's not my credit card either. It is our joint efforts of quite a few credit cards or bank loans. But Baruch Hashem, listen, that is what Ani Lo Nivreisi, that is what we hear. The Shamash is koini to serve God, and this is the way that the Rebbe taught us, so we do whatever we can. And speaking about doing the Sdorim the way the Rebbe taught us, you know, next week is Yud Aleph Nissen. We already got lots of feedback last year about our post and talk about Yud Aleph Nissen. Those who want to get their blood boiled could listen from last year's episode. Those who don't want to get their blood boiled, they should look at the WhatsApp messages of all the crazies who spoke about it last year. But so no, we're not going to go through that again. We grew in a year, so we don't have to...
We've all matured. We've matured. Our audience has matured. And Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of important good things to talk about in honor of Yud Aleph Nissen.
Exactly. But that's definitely something. Pesach is an important Yom Tov, important holiday. It just, it's 10:30 at night by me. It just got off from a Zoom with a couple hundred of people speaking about the Hasidic message of Pesach and how to apply that the whole year. Don't have to repeat it here if you want. It's in Turkish, but you could try to see it on my Facebook for those who want. But yes, Pesach is Pesach, and Pesach for us, for Chabad Shluchim, has a whole different meaning, because as we spoke about last year, and we seem to rehash things, you know, we eat the matzah every year. We also speak about the same topics on Chatting Rabbis every year, but it's not the traditional Seder that most people have and imagine in their homes. It's a different type of Seder.
People are surprised that there's no matzah balls, there's no knedlach at our Seder. That seems to be the biggest surprise for most of our guests.
No matzah ball, no knedlach. I would add many other things that we usually had in my father's table, but it's very, very different. No plastic bags, because people don't want to feel like horses.
Right, you're right, right. You're saying it's hard to enforce. It's hard to get people to sit and eat the matzah over a plastic bag. So for those of our listeners that are unfamiliar with this unique tradition, that I probably anybody that avoids getting their matzah wet on Pesach also avoids getting crumbs on the table and on the dishes. I tell my crowd that throughout the year we try to avoid making a mess on the floor. Any crumbs, any mess should stay on the table. But on Pesach we specifically request that you make a mess on the floor when you eat the matzah, and when you eat matzah, that it should be eaten in a bag. And all the crumbs should go into it, and everybody smiles and shakes their head as if, yes, of course they're going to do it. And then it's hard to enforce. And that's what it is. It's part of, I guess we can call it part of the Mesiras Nefesh, part of the sacrifice. You know, sometimes you have your own chumras and your own stringencies that you've grown up with, that I grew up with. And when it comes to sharing the holidays with others, we have to... be able to look the other way almost and remind ourselves that just because we have these chumras and these stringencies doesn't mean that this is an absolute requirement. And our goal is to make people, our guests at our Seder, and any Jew that shows up at our Seder as comfortable as possible and to make it enjoyable. And you know, we try every year to change, like you said before, that we tell the same stories every year and we repeat the same Haggadah.
We eat the same breakfast every morning.
We eat the same potatoes and eggs for 8 days straight. And at the same time, as a shliach, when you run a community seder, the fact that people keep coming back means that they're enjoying it. More than just they're enjoying the food, which 100% is the draw. But at the same time, I've heard some feedback from our community sedarim the last couple of years, how interesting it was, how entertaining it was. I think that that we have our work cut out for us to keep people entertained and keep people interested and make the Seder an educational experience where people don't just come to eat the matzah and drink the wine, which is important, of course, the mitzvah, but also use it as a springboard to grow in their Yiddishkeit. Like you said, Pesach, the message of Pesach doesn't apply just for this 8-day period, but it's for the entire year. So that's what we hope to accomplish, and it's a challenge. Most of us, like I said before, grew up with a smaller family siddurim, and over the last 20 years, at least for me, running a community seder has been a unique and changing experience. My children don't know any different. My children don't know what it's like to be at a. I guess they do because the second night we have a smaller family seder, but the first seder, which starts right on time. It reminds me of what Elter Zeide used to say at the beginning of every Seder when we would come from school with our prepared Dvar Torahs, and we would start saying, Kadesh, wenn der Tate kommt daheim von Schul,
macht man Kiddush.
So we would go through a whole elaborate introduction, and he would say, Nein, Pesach banacht, wenn der Tate kommt von Schul, macht man Kiddush. That's it. Enough with the introductions. Kiddush, because the longer you wait, the more of a chance that the children will fall asleep and the Seder will draw out, and we don't want to do that. So my children don't have that experience. Obviously, they don't have the experience of being at a Seder with Elter Zeder, with our great-grandfather, or even with our grandfather. But we try to give them that experience. I think we spoke about this in past episodes on the second night. But nevertheless, it's still different. They don't have the same experience of being just with family, just with their grandparents. And
they had it throughout the corona.
Yeah. So for the corona, for the COVID Seder, that 1 year, 3 years ago, we had a family Seder. But an interesting thing, I hope nobody gets offended by this. For our family Seder on the first night of Pesach in 2020, all of my children dressed up like different people that normally come to our community Seder from our community. to make it feel like it's a community Seder. So one person dressed up like, my daughter dressed up like this lady, my son's dressed up like a couple of these guys, and put on the similar clothing that they wear, and a pair of glasses, a pair of shoes that reminded them of these people, to make it interesting and to keep it entertaining.
Well, that's
at least
funny.
At least for then.
But you know, some of my kids really wish to come back to the corona days and would really wish to have, again, no guests at the Shabbos table and nobody at the Seder table. And just to stay with family, and they and it's something which I think about from time to time. You know, my kids do get stressed out a little bit, and on Friday night when we have 70 people every Shabbos, and my son is asking a question, and I'm trying to help to answer him, but at the same time have to be responsive to 70 other people. It's not always easy.
Yeah. You know, if we're being perfectly honest, sometimes I also miss those corona days where I also appreciated just being by myself. Not to say that I don't appreciate serving my community and being there for everyone, but, you know, having 3-4 months without davening in shul allowed me to spend time on my own Shabbos and focusing on how I was davening and on how I was learning, and there was no rush, so I didn't have to be anywhere. And then after we reopened, we started having a minyan every other Shabbos, not every Shabbos. And once we started every Shabbos, some of my kids were like, oh, we really like every other Shabbos better. Can we go back to that?
You see? There's certain things that have still remained. But nevertheless, Pesach is around the corner. But it's also this time of the year, and I want to mention it. It has nothing to do with Pesach, but it's just this time of the year when kids, boys or girls, get accepted to different yeshivas. And I, as a son of my parents run a seminary, and I get many phone calls from friends and colleagues who are asking me to please intervene on behalf of their children, or the girls who want to be to participate or be accepted in my parents' seminary. Now, I have never interfered because I knew it's not going to help. People ask me to interfere, and I knew it's not going to help because there are certain criteria, and I guess they decide what fits into their criteria. Now, I am not an educator. I said it a million times in this chat. But the whole concept of having a seminary with a criteria, of having a yeshiva with a criteria, a reputation that we have to uphold, a concept of we have to take care of our moised, should be it a certain way, is something which is very, very repulsive to me. Because if it would have been about keeping a reputation for a yeshiva, I would never be accepted in any yeshiva.
Most of us wouldn't live up to the standards that yeshivas expect of the students.
It wasn't like that when I was in yeshiva, I'm sorry.
Well, what changed primarily is the size of the community. There are so many yeshiva students that the yeshivas can choose who they do accept and who they don't accept. When we were in yeshiva, if the yeshiva chose not to accept 20 bachrim, they'll have 20 empty seats. Today, the yeshivas don't have that problem, and therefore they don't care about... I don't know if they don't care. They convince themselves that they care, but really, at the end of the day, their focus is primarily on their reputation and on growing their moysid, like you said, their own institution and their name and their fame. And the people that suffer are those that get left out, that fall through the cracks. And I started saying before that we wouldn't have lasted in the acceptance process, not necessarily in the yeshiva itself, because once the student gets accepted to the yeshiva, there's very, very rarely do students, whether they're boys or girls, live up to the standards that they supposedly pretended to adhere to in the acceptance process. It's only in the acceptance process. And I have children, and you have children at the age of yeshivas and seminaries, and we see it up front, and my children tell me about it up close and personal, where kids that are supposedly from wonderful families and have great reputations, in school they're just like everybody else, and sometimes even worse, and sometimes they're the troublemakers, but they have a good name, so they were accepted. And what the people running the schools don't realize is that tarnishes their reputation even more than accepting someone who isn't perfect. And when someone who drops to Yiddishkeit after 3 years in your yeshiva, that's bigger damage to the reputation of your school or your seminary.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we, like we said many times, and you just mentioned it before, we're not educators, so we're pontificators. We can sit and pontificate, but when it hits close to home, and we have children in that area, and some of us more than others see our children suffering from it, it's something that you can't help but speak out about. So even though we were in the middle of talking about Pesach, but bringing this concept up.
No, that's perfectly part of Pesach. That's about cleaning up the chametz.
Burning the chametz, scouring.
Burning the chametz. It's about burning the chametz. I have friends who call me up crying that I should help their kids get accepted in seminary. My heart breaks. I also know that whatever I'm going to say is not going to be helpful. So I just, that's my answer. I'm sorry. I'm totally divorced of that.
It may be more helpful if you convinced your friend that it's not something that he should be trying to do.
I don't even want, you know, some people have,
right.
some kids have their, you know, they see themselves somehow, for some reason, I totally disagree, but that, well, they want to spend a year in this seminary, and they get very heartbroken when it doesn't happen. Well, if somebody really wants to, then they should be accepted in the seminary. I'm sorry. Well, I mean, they make a rule that the first 50 people who apply get accepted.
That used to be the case with camps. Used to be that camp opened their registration like a January 1st, and people were sitting by their computers like within 30 seconds it was full and you couldn't register anymore. So now what they started doing is that they started giving a week to register, and they say on their website everybody that registers within this time frame will be given equal consideration.
And what? And now they're starting to filter camp attendance?
Yeah, so some of the camps say that they do it by determining based on who they accept, based on the value that the person brings to this camp, so to speak. And other camps say that they do it by goyrel, by lottery, a raffle. They pick names out of a hat.
As they say in Hebrew, im yesh ksharim lo tzer protekciot.
Right, exactly. You want to translate that?
If you know people in the right places, you don't really need anybody's favors.
Right. More like what they say, don't rely on miracles, just say a capital tillim.
Exactly. But you know what? Sometimes I have a feeling that this whole Chabad, I don't know if it's true, maybe true in other places also. Our educational system needs a hard reset, starting from the application process.
What are the chances of that actually happening?
What are the chances of us getting a lot of hate mail after this episode?
I have a feeling that a lot more people are going to relate to this conversation than some of our other ones. Or relate in the sense that they agree with, and
I hope my parents don't listen to it.
The main problem I think that people have with some of our conversations is not so much with what we say, but that we said it. People prefer to brush things under the rug rather than put it out in the open and discuss about the painful topics or topics that need to be addressed. And, you know, to those people I say, if you don't want to hear it, then you don't have to listen. You can change the channel, as they say. But if change is going to happen, then you need to speak about it. It needs to be brought up. It needs to be raised. It needs to be hashed out. It needs to be discussed. And I don't know if we're going to be the ones to make the change or to bring about the change. But if the conversation can't happen, then for sure, there's never going to be change. And for sure, things aren't going to improve. And to convince yourself that everything is great because you didn't hear anybody speak about it, because nobody complained, is exactly what the perpetrators of the problems are hoping for. Nobody speaks about it, and you keep doing it, and you keep you stick with what's familiar, and you don't change, and everybody supposedly is happy.
I was prompt to speak about it because one of our mutual friends has brought to my attention an article that was on COL Live. Now, I'm not a very big fan of COL Live. I don't follow the website, and I think that it has a certain fault in the lowering of the Chabad standards in general. But somebody sent me this article about that a parent, a fellow shliach, wrote about his son who has a learning disability, and a yeshiva in his hometown refused to accept or even consider his application to yeshiva and said, let your son learn a trade. 14-year-old kid, let him learn a trade. I mean, what a sick attitude is that?
It's painful.
It's painful, especially when you speak about a maysid, an institution, a Chabad institution, in your very hometown, where you are a shliach for. What do you want the kid to do? What should they do? What should the parents do?
Especially if it's a family that has several children. And
and what should they do with their older son or daughter? Or the 17-year-old who can't get into seminary? What should they do?
Yeah.
And why? Because some self-proclaimed educator decided that for the sake of his moysid, he has a responsibility for his moysid. So he can't let his moysid down.
The only thing I can say about this, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, the only thing I can say is that this particular anonymous letter that you're referring to only tells us one side of the story. And it could very well be that this side is correct, 100%. But I'm going to reserve comment on it. It's a very painful story to read, but I'm going to reserve comment on it because I really don't know what's going on the yeshiva side. I have no idea. So I'm not taking any sides, and as a parent, I would be yelling and screaming from the rooftops in the same way if something like that happened to my child.
I don't know. I was just crying.
Yeah, because that's the natural reaction as a parent, especially.
And that is what I did when my friend called me that his daughter was not accepted to a seminary. I was just crying. There's nothing I could say. Nothing that I'd say would also help. Okay, at least the fact that I added that nothing I can say is going to help is going to prevent other people from trying to call me and trying to convince my to put their kids in a seminary. It really doesn't help. But I have nothing to do with it. But it is painful. And yes, I could understand also that, you know, some people, you know, there are, you have to have kids, some kids who are gifted, but, you know, have stronger learning abilities. They have to have a stronger learning environment. Otherwise, it's also a waste. So I could understand if there be a Shiva or a place where this is a stronger learning abilities. I could understand that, I guess. There is a, could be room for that. I don't know if it's very much in line with what the way the Rebbe's education system.
Right. And also within a couple of years, that's going to become the norm and everyone's going to try to get their kid into
that
school.
But that is exactly it. That once that becomes a norm, everybody is trying to get this heaven. If they don't get their kid in, that is a whole reason to make a whole to write letters to COL. How come the elitist place didn't accept my kid who is so special? I could understand that too.
Listen, no one ever said it was easy to raise kids or raise a family.
That's why I'm not an educator.
And that's what I was going to say. Back to square one. Let the people that know what they're doing do it. But on the other hand, do the people that know what they're doing or claim to know what they're doing actually know what they're doing?
There's also a thing here. There's limited place at the end. You know, even a seminary that could have, let's say, 300 students, can't have 500. There's a limit in how many people you could take.
So we try to end up on a positive note.
Positive note is that people should open up new yeshivas. And people should have more compassion. And people should open new seminaries.
Compassion and love and care. But most importantly, Pesach being the holiday of V'higadot l'Avincha, where we educate our children and the focus is entirely on the children. That should be the takeaway from the Pesach Seder. Not the hundreds of people at our Sdarim. Not the delicious food that we serve.
Only very few.
Yeah, we're having about 30 at our Seder. So, kol yachasit, it's all relative. But my sons are out now. My sons, now that they drive, they're out delivering matzah to as many Jewish homes in the area as possible. And that's hopefully the education that I gave them and that they will continue on for many years to come until we merit to the Gula Amitis Vashlema with Mashiach. May it be speedily in our days, b'mheira v'yameinu.
Inshallah, as we say.
Chag Sameach.
All the best. Take care, Eliezer. Good talking to you.
I'll catch you on the other side of the holiday.